Court of Appeals is reconvened.
You may be seated. Have we heard from counsel for the respondent? Then I think we'll proceed with argument from counsel for appellant, and if counsel for respondent comes in, he can join.
Good afternoon. Rebecca Chafee, C-H-A-F-F-E-E, on behalf of appellant Stephen Steele. May it please the court. This matter is before the court on Mr. Steele's appeal of his judgment and decree arising from his marriage dissolution proceeding and the underlying pretrial order of October 24, 2017, which imposed discovery sanctions against him. Mr. Steele requested a new trial or alternatively amended findings on the property issues, which this court, or rather the district court, denied in both cases. We submit that the district court abused its discretion in entering the underlying judgment decree, the discovery sanction order, and denying the post-trial motions. Where findings of fact are clearly erroneous, that is, there's a lack of substantial evidentiary support, the district court abuses its discretion. In this case, we submit that imposing this discovery sanctions order and also the misapplication of the October 2017 order to the evidentiary hearing were both abuses of discretion.
I'm going to say, when I look at whether it was an abuse of discretion for the sanction, and one of your arguments is, well, the court should clearly put someone on notice. I mean, a lot of that order was, I think the underlying order, I forget if it's in May or in June, was based upon a stipulation that your client's attorney signed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So I find it hard to understand your argument that he wasn't somehow on notice that this evidence regarding non-marital claims could be disallowed when his attorney stipulated to that if it wasn't produced in a certain time.
Sure, but the Court of Appeals opinions that we've cited in our brief indicate that there needs to be a clear deadline as well as a clear warning as to the sanctions.
Well, so why wasn't that order and that stipulation that embodied that stipulation the clear warning, because then it was extended and then there was another clear deadline with that same warning and the court imposed the sanctions?
So the May 2017 order, which was a stipulation and which set forth the June 2017 deadline, did provide for notice of a sanction. But those terms were all essentially made of no effect when the parties then agreed to a new discovery of November 1st, 2017. During the motion hearing on June 12, 2017, wife's counsel actually indicated that she wasn't pursuing her motion to compel at that point, that she was still pursuing attorney fees, and that's where the August 2017 order does not any longer spell out that there will be a sanction moving forward. It does not say that if Mr. Steele did not comply with the discovery by a certain date, that there would be the preclusion of any non-marital information. Instead, that August 2017 order reserves the allocation of attorney fees with respect to any of Mr. Steele's failure to comply with any ongoing discovery. And I think, Your Honor, in light of the fact that the parties did reach this stipulation that was memorialized, but then discovery was substantially produced, we know that there was a significant document inspection at the homestead on June 9th, 2017, where the record indicates that there were at least a dozen banker's boxes with information provided by Mr. Steele to wife's attorney. She was given the opportunity to copy any and all documents. We also know that at the June 12, 2017 hearing, Mr. Steele had already provided Ms. Steele with some documentation of his non-marital claims. Wife's attorney references that there, in her view, was at least documentation to demonstrate a 20% non-marital claim to the homestead.
I mean, you're going on to, as far as what he did produce, but the way I read the district court order was it was anything that hadn't been produced already was going to be precluded as far as during the ultimate trial. Isn't that correct?
Well, that could be the way the court should read the order, except there are no findings in the actual October 2017 order that form the basis for the sanctions. The court very generally says that Mr. Steele had not produced or complied with the August 2017 order. But very telling is what the district court said at the evidentiary hearing. So on January 5th, 2018, when Mr. Steele's attorney asked for a continuance in order to allow information to be produced, the district court said that in denying the request for the continuance, said, quote, despite all of that, there was no discovery regarding the non-marital claim from June of 16 to October of 2017. There was no real list of non-marital property, and there was no supporting documentation, which was why the court issued the order in October of 2017, end quote. This specific finding by the district court is not supported by the record whatsoever. That is not an accurate finding of what had occurred.
Well, are you saying that there was evidence that was produced during discovery related to the non-marital claims that the district court did not permit into evidence at trial? If you could answer the question.
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two issues with the discovery. In that, one is the inappropriate order for sanctions, but then the misapplication of that order. So ultimately, there was this order precluding the introduction of evidence. But how the court applied the order was to disallow any non-marital claims. So even the evidence that was submitted to the district court via wife's exhibits, there was very clear evidence of non-marital claims that were part of her exhibits, very specifically exhibit 1N through 1Q detailed the four parcels of real property
And maybe we could go to that.
Sure. So those four parcels of real property were supported by the information that the receiver had summarized and then presented in an exhibit by wife. So even if this court felt as though there was an appropriate warning of sanctions and an appropriate deadline set, this evidence had been presented. Now, the October 2017 order said husband could not introduce evidence. In this particular example, wife introduced that evidence.
And I think that was what I was getting to. It seemed to me he was saying husband couldn't produce evidence that wasn't produced in discovery regarding the not that the court wasn't going to consider the claims.
Well, that's what the order says, but what the court ultimately did was to say it was disallowing all non-marital claims. And that's what effectively the court ordered. So even with that property that was held as a remainder interest with a life estate with Mr. Steele's mother, that property was not determined to be Mr. Steele's non-marital asset either. That was listed as property that was marital, and then Ms. Steele received over $400,000 in the form of an equalization payment as a result of that characterization.
Could I ask you about a couple of the other entries? I was looking at the chart towards the end of your brief, where you set these out, and there were some that I just did not follow where you, what the support in the record was for your view that this was non-marital property. So beginning with the retirement accounts, and I understand that was one that was actually awarded to your client, but what is the evidence that that is non-marital?
So there was a retirement statement that was provided at the time of trial, and Mr. Bodensteiner, his former attorney, offered proof of the sole deposit and the witness he would have called had such evidence been allowed to be be introduced.
That's so helpful to me to understand. You're just saying he would have introduced that evidence, but it's not in the record.
That's correct, Your Honor. With regard to the remainder interest, we went through that. With regard to the 80 acres, the June 2017 hearing reflects that wife's attorney had already received that information at that time, but at the time of the actual evidentiary hearing, it was made clear to Mr. Steele that he wasn't allowed to produce any of that information.
I thought there was evidence in the record that this was transferred. It was transferred to your client from his parents in 1999, but then it was transferred later from both he and his wife, which would suggest to me that there's record evidence that that is marital property.
Well, but transfer the title alone, especially when it was done in this case to a revocable trust eventually, is for estate planning purposes. And there's Minnesota Court of Appeals case law that demonstrates that assets that are transferred for title purposes only for estate planning is not any indication that it has somehow been transmuted into marital property.
The property, this is a way out there question, so bear with me, but the property that that your client has a remainder interest subject to his mother's life estate, his mother's living, isn't she? It isn't just that they haven't recognized that on the actual title.
Well, at the time of the trial, she was living. Okay, she has since passed.
I just wanted to make sure. I know Judge Schwab is usually so particular about findings, so I just wondered if that was the case.
Yep.
That's for the next case coming in.
With regard to the remaining issues on the list, there, again, was this preclusion and this really long shadow that was created by the imposition of the sanctions. And I would like to just go back to the discovery sanctions and the notice that was provided. At the June 2017 hearing, the only deficiency that wife's attorney had listed at that time was either the list of farm equipment or that Mr. Steele had not provided appropriate proof of payments that were being made on contracts for deed. In some ways, Your Honor, I'm not trying to say that Mr. Steele was not still responsible for answering discovery, but Mr. Steele's former attorney indicated how challenging the case was, and there were some capacity issues. He invoked Rule 1.14 of the Minnesota Rules of Professional Conduct in order to get a receiver appointed so that all of the information really could be overseen and produced and demonstrated to wife so that there was, in fact, full disclosure.
You know, I know, counsel, that you keep wanting to go back to the discovery sanctions, and I keep wanting to ask you about the individual items, so but I'm going to take you there. So looking at the rental value of the 80 acres, you say there's insufficient evidence. Trying to track this down, and even in the court document, it says it's based on argument, and I looked back at the respondent's argument in support of the proposed order, and they talk about tillable acres rent, you know, and that being the basis for this projection, what the rent should be. I mean, if counsel respondent was here, I would be asking that counsel this question, but is there anything in the record, any testimony about that? I'm just trying to understand.
No, there's not any testimony. There's no documentation demonstrating that amount, and it literally says in the judgment decree that the basis of that award is based on, quote, argument. And this was part of the issue in that the district court ended up signing off on the wife's proposed judgment decree virtually verbatim. And so that particular asset should not be awarded to my client. There's no basis in the record. Similarly, on the 2013 check for $150,000, the only testimony in the record on that issue was that that money had been spent. There was no testimony that it had been transferred and was sitting somewhere or that it was not used for marital purposes.
But I thought part of the reason the judge was troubled by that was that your client refused to answer where the money came from. So this is money that he got in 2013. Am I thinking of the right check? There were a number of checks in this case.
The testimony in record was that it was spent on Julio's, which was a marital asset that had been determined by the court to be a marital asset.
That's what he testified, but there's no documentation to that effect, correct?
Well, there's no documentation, but there's also nothing that refutes that he didn't spend that money. And Ms. Steele had bank statements in all of the financial accounts, as well as the receiver had that information
but
as well.
I guess I go back to the fact that the presumption is the property is marital, and it's your client's, I mean, assuming we set aside the discovery sanction issue, and it's your client's duty to overcome that presumption. And the testimony when he wouldn't, and so my suggestion would be the testimony that he spent on Julio's when he has no documentation and he won't say where the money came from might not have been credible with the district court, correct?
Well, I believe he did in testimony say it came from his mother. So that was part of the record that it was provided in that way. But we're looking at a check that was written or that was provided from 5 years ago at the time of the judgment and decree. And unless that's an asset that can be demonstrated to be in existence, I mean, it's fairly arbitrary to go ahead and pick one statement or one check and not actually have some demonstration that there is an existing asset to be divided. There's no argument that there was a waste or a dissipation of that $150,000.
Ms. Jeffy, I have one final question. Maybe my colleagues have some for you as well. But if we agree with you on at least some of these items, then would you agree that the appropriate response is to send it back to the district court? They'd have to do an undue hardship, I believe, analysis, and perhaps reconsider spousal maintenance.
Well, I don't think that there is a basis, given the marital property that the court did decide should be apportioned to Ms. Steele. But certainly, if the court was going to try to apportion any of Mr. Steele's non-marital assets to Ms. Steele, they would need to make particular findings that there is an unfair hardship, that there is a wide disparity between the parties. I don't think that will be shown in this case, but certainly that would be an analysis that would need to occur.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The court will take the matter under advisement, and an opinion will be issued in the statutory time period. We are going to reconfigure our panel, so we will take just a 5-minute recess and be back. Thank you.
And so the last time that I did, she was, I think it was during her last day.